Hello, everybody. You're gathered here today for the 30th November, 165th, 61st session of Mindfulness for Beginners in English, conducted by Nisara Navaneya. I would like to warmly welcome Venerable Homagama Dhamma Kusala Thero for our session today. So our program, as usual, will commence with the in-session practice of mindfulness, and we'll follow by with the talk on today's topic by Bhante. Once that is up, the next on the agenda is the reports we have received presented to Bhante and for his feedback, and then we will have some time for questions for today. So to start today's session, let me invite Venerable Bhante to start the in-session practice of mindfulness. Over to you, Bhante.
Thanks, Sonali. Hello, everyone. Today, let's start with a sitting practice. Few minutes, we'll try to sit mindfully. With that, we can start today's program. For this, you have to make sure that you are seated comfortably. Better keep your back upright. Make sure that your posture is balanced and comfortable. Once you are comfortable in your posture, you can gently close your eyes. Try to be aware of the present moment. If you bring your attention to the seated body, you might notice certain sensations. Maybe the breathing in your body might become prominent. We try to be mindful of these breathing sensations. Notice how the breath goes in and how it comes out. Again, the breath goes in and it comes out. This way, we try to be mindful of our breathing. Time to time, your attention might go to certain thoughts, memories, future planning, these kind of things. Sometimes you become sleepy. Sometimes certain irritations appear in your body. You may hear surrounding sounds as well. But among all these things, you can repetitively return your attention back to the breathing. Again, notice how the breath goes in and how it comes out. This way, we try to continue our mindfulness. Let's see whether we can stay a few more minutes. Okay, everyone, now you can open your eyes again. That's just few minutes of mindful practice, just to give you an idea. With that, Sonali, you can take over.
Thank you, Bhante. So the next item in the agenda is a talk on today's topic, delivered by Venerable Bhante. So today's topic is desire, and I warmly welcome Venerable Homagama Dhamma Kusila Thero to start on today's topic.
Okay, everyone. Today we have a fresh topic. We will take some time to discuss about it and see how we can relate this to our mindful practice. Now, let's say when we think about our daily encounters, we have a desire. That desire is more like a fire. We put certain things into this fire, try to get satisfaction out of that. But what happens is that whatever that you put into the fire will start burning larger and larger. That's what happens. You throw some firewood, it'll take that as fuel and start burning more aggressively. You throw some branches, that too will help to burn the same fire more aggressively. So this way, whatever we throw, the fire will use it as a fuel. And as a result, the fire will burn even more aggressively. So this is happening all the time. We are quite never there. We think that if we get this, we'll be happy. If we achieve these goals, I'll be happy. That way you think. But when you get there, something else is missing. You try to achieve some other thing. You have another target, another goal. Then you keep chasing that other goal. And when you reach the second destination, still there'll be something else that is missing. Right? So this way, all our lives, we are feeding. We are feeding the fire of desire. And that is what we are doing. We try to satisfy ourselves by feeding this fire. But what happens is that instead of getting satisfied, instead of getting enough, that fire will burn even more aggressively. So this is happening all the time. So today's topic, it is somewhat related to this idea. It says the man who tries to conquer, the man who tries to conquer more, he will be a prisoner of his own trap. Right? So he's trying to conquer more and more things, and what happens is that he'll get caught in his own trap. He'll get caught in the same process. And the quote says, the web that catches the spider, right? The spider is the owner of the web, but at the end of the day, the same web might catch the spider, right? So that happens to the man who tries to conquer more. He tries to conquer everything. He tries to achieve everything. He tries to get everything. He's not quite there. Yeah. He need one more thing to be satisfied. Once he get it, he needs something else. So this way it is a never-ending vicious cycle kind of a thing. You are feeding this process again and again. You try to satisfy it with the things that you have to offer, but still, at the end of the day, the desires are not fulfilled. Still, you have the lacking. Still, you feel that something is lacking. Right? So, this way, what we do is early in the morning, we start till the nightfall, we try to satisfy our needs. We go and we work, earn money. We go enjoy various things, probably go to a restaurant and enjoy a meal. We buy certain things, we go shopping, right? We try to satisfy our family members with various things. We try, but it is a never-ending process. So you start early in the morning until night falls. You are on the run. You try to complete these things. But still, at the end of the day, you go to sleep with a feeling of lacking. Still, today, you were not able to complete these things. Tomorrow is a fresh day. Tomorrow, you start again. Right? So, this way, we are running towards some illusion. We are trying to satisfy this desire by feeding it. Right? So, this process you can do forever, but still you won't be satisfied. Right? So, what's the solution? Buddha's solution. Buddha says, it's good that you stop doing these things, right? At least for a while, at least for half an hour, at least for a couple of hours. Can you at least try and stop feeding these things? Can you at least try and stop running, chasing after these things? Right? That is the very practice that we are doing. Now, today I met a young man, and he was saying that due to his working conditions, he is staying alone. Solitude. He doesn't have other people, many people. He doesn't have family members. He's living alone. He's having solitude. So he is trying to convince me that, Bhante, I have solitude. I am not with my family members, I live alone, and I don't have many friends. So I now know how to appreciate the solitude. That way he is thinking. You can be distant from your family members. You may not be among friends. You may be alone in a room or a house. But still, are you a solitary creature? Right? That's a question that you have to ask. Usually, when you have a phone, you are connected to everywhere. Right? It doesn't matter that you are alone. Still, you are distracted towards the outside things. You have phones, you browse on them. You have certain other devices. You make calls and stuff. Or you go travel somewhere, watch the nature, eat some food, right? So that way, although you are living alone, it is not the real solitude, right? So Buddha's suggestion is that turn inwards. Instead of turning outwards, turn inwards. It doesn't matter that you are alone, you might be distracted towards the outside things, right? It doesn't prove that you are alone in your mind. That's not the case. Usually, although we are alone, we are connected through a phone, we are connected through other things. Usually, we are distracted towards the outside things. So, the suggestion is to be alone with yourself. Turn inwards. That's what we do. That is the very practice, right? So you can go to a quiet place, you can sit, you can gently close your eyes and try to turn your attention inwards. That is the very practice. Even today's sitting session, that's what we did. We closed our eyes, we sat in a comfortable posture, We were in a quieter environment and we tried to turn our attention inwards. This is the very idea, or this is the very practice. So usually when we do this, we can feel the bodily sensations. Maybe the breathing in your body that might become prominent. Maybe some other sensation in your body, pressure on your back, right? So these things become prominent. That way, certain bodily sensations become prominent. It could be the breathing at your nostrils, it could be your belly movements, or it could be the posture, right? So we try to maintain our attention with the prominent bodily sensation. We are not all scanning all the time. That's not what we are doing. Instead, we try to fix our attention on a prominent bodily sensation. Let it be the breathing or the belly. Whatever you feel as the prominent sensation, you try to fix your attention there. And you try to continue with that attention for a while. At least for a few breaths, you try to continue your attention. When you try to do this, you can feel your mind at work. The usual desires. You might start thinking about food, maybe, right? What's the meal that I'm going to have for today's lunch? You start wondering, your mind starts thinking. Or maybe some family members or some other incident might come to your mind. Again, you can feel these things. You can feel where your mind moves, right? So when you try this, you can really feel the desires of your mind at work. Whatever the important things to you, whatever the things that you have been feeding so far, they will come. Usually for a beginner, the shallow things might come, right? Day-to-day matters, like your job, your family members, those things. But when you continue for a while, you start to feel the deeper things as well. Maybe childhood trauma, other things, some forgotten incidents, right? So various things are there in our mind. When you try this, when you try to turn your attention inwards, then only you start to feel this process. Some people, they sit for a while, they get some idea, thought, or something, and they suddenly stop. They are sitting and try to go do that idea. Right? They open their eyes, they try to finish that task and come back again. What's the idea there? They try to feed their desire and again try to find a satisfaction by feeding it. Some people, they come for 3 days retreat. They come and say, Bante, I came for a 3 day retreat. And they start the retreat, and after a few hours, maybe after a night, they say, I have this emergency. I have to go and do it. I won't be able to complete whole 3 days. What's the emergency? If you ask them, they will say, I have this electricity bill that I have to pay. I have to complete that and come, right? So you can see these desires, various ideas, various opinions, various tasks, they are given to us. And suddenly we forget about mindfulness and we go on feeding these desires. This happens, right? Even some people, they can't keep their eyes closed for a few minutes even. They open their eyes, they go do something. Again, they come back and sit. After a few minutes, they go, right? So this way, you can see the desires of your mind at work. For a busy person, our recommendation is at least try to do like 20, 30, or even 40 minutes of sitting daily. Daily, try to do this. 40 minutes, it's not a long time, right? Out of 24 hours, 40 minutes, it's not a biggie, right? So you can create this habit of sitting for 40 minutes. You try to appreciate being alone with yourself. This is the real aloneness that we are saying, right? It won't come because just because you are alone. You have to turn your attention inwards. Then only you will be really alone. Every day, like 40 minutes or so, you try to practice this. Do a sitting session and do a walking session if possible, right? So this way you have to start exercising the practice. Then only you start to see the desires of your mind at work. Getting rid of desire, it's not easy. Instead, what we are trying to do is we are trying to see the desires as they are. That's the very idea. Most people, they think either this extreme or that extreme. Sometimes they are 100% worldly. They do their work, jobs and stuff, raise children. Their 100% attention is towards the worldly things. And sometimes they go to the other extreme. They try to give up everything and come to a monastery, right? Be alone in the solitude. Those two both are extremes. Instead, what we are recommending is live your own life. Be where you are. Live your life. Go to work. Do your things. But at least among these things, can you try sitting for 40 minutes? Can you try appreciating being alone with oneself for at least 40 minutes? That's the very idea. There's this Zen kind of story about a foreigner coming to a forest and meeting a teacher. He's saying that, "Bhante, I came for meditation. I would like to stay with you and practice." Then this teacher is asking, that this teacher is saying, "I hope you are not afraid of suffering." That's the teacher's answer. He's saying, "I hope you are not afraid of suffering." Then this foreigner, he got confused. His idea was to get rid of the suffering, right? But this teacher is saying, "I hope you are not afraid of suffering." What's the confusion here? What's the idea here? Usually, there is suffering that will lead to more suffering. That is the very idea of this topic. You know, you follow your desires, you suffer. And those desires, that very suffering, will lead you to more suffering. Okay? But there is this suffering that will lead you towards the end of suffering. What is this suffering? Practicing, it's also hard. Practicing daily, it needs some effort, courage. It needs fortitude, right? So that too might be suffering. But this is the suffering that will lead you towards the end of suffering. Otherwise, the worldly sufferings, worldly desires, they are leading you towards more and more suffering. But this very practice, although it takes some courage, it takes some effort, you need to suffer a certain amount. This very suffering is needed to get rid of the suffering, to move towards the end of suffering. So daily practicing for 40 minutes, it might not be so easy. Keeping up with it might not be so easy. But you somehow take the courage, you somehow take the effort and do it daily. That very practice will help you to get rid of the suffering. That's the very idea. Now, let's say if you continue with this kind of a practice, after a while, when you practice for some time, you start to feel these deep things in your mind. Maybe certain past incidents, psychological wounds kind of things, right? Sometimes these wounds, they appear as physical pain in your body. They appear as physical symptoms in your body. So going through these patches, these rough patches, it is not easy. Sometimes you have to suffer a lot. In the name of the practice, you have to suffer. Every time you sit, you get exhausted. Every time you sit, you get this pain in your body. Sometimes your mind is all over the place. So many thoughts, so many memories are rushing through your mind. And it's not easy to bear. But the practitioner, they go through these difficulties. They go through this very suffering and tries to put an end to the suffering. Right? So in the name of the practice also, you might have to suffer a little. But that very suffering will put an end to the suffering. Right? So that's the very idea. Usually in Western psychology, they try to dig the past. Right? You meet a therapist and you start talking, try to solve the things in the past, try to discuss, try to dig them, right? Try to dig up the buried bodies, right? So that type of approach is there in the Western psychology. But in this practice also, we are going through a healing process. We are going through a healing process of these deep things in your mind. But we are not trying to dig for the past incidents. Instead, what we do is we accept the present moment. We try to accept it fully. And when we accept the present moment, you might feel certain symptoms of these past psychological wounds. Some symptoms are bodily, physical symptoms. Some things you can feel in the mind, right? So there is this wound in the deep of your mind, and as a result, you feel these physical symptoms. As a result, you feel this excruciating pain in your body. As a result, you feel this never-ending anxiety in your mind, right? So instead of digging the past, what we try to do is we try to accept the present moment. Accept the present situation of your mind and body. By that very acceptance, you are in the healing process. Right? That's the best way to heal. That's the fastest way to heal. Otherwise, what happens is that you keep on digging. It's sometimes a never-ending process. You keep on discussing your past incidents, past trauma, and it's a never-ending process. That is not the recommended one in the practice of mindfulness. What we suggest is, whatever the present situation may be, try to accept it. Try to let it be at least if you can't accept. Sometimes the situation is too difficult, you can't accept, but at least try to let it be. That's the very idea of the practice. And when you do that, what happens is, as a result, you go through this healing process. Your mind and body, it heals, right? It heals. And when you go through these rough patches, when you continue for some time, you start to see how your mind is becoming lighter and lighter. How your baseline happiness is increasing. You can feel it, right? When I say baseline happiness, it's like, average level of happiness in one's mind. Some people, they are towards the positive side. Some people, they are towards the negative side, right? No matter whatever the outside conditions are, some people, they are always seeing the negative side. Their baseline happiness is lower, towards more suffering. Their mind is in that natural state, right? Some people, no matter whatever happens in the outside world, they are more cheerful, right? They are more or less happy. It doesn't matter whatever the outside situations are. Their baseline happiness is higher, right? So what happens is that when you continue with the practice, when you continue, let's say for a few months, with the support of the practice, your baseline happiness, it is going up. It is increasing. So your overall happiness will increase. Your overall happiness of life will increase. That's the very idea. And when you see that progress, it is a sign that you are no longer feeding your desires. Still, you are feeding somewhat, but not as to the level that you used to feed, right? That improvement is there. If you keep on feeding your desires, you'll feel anxiety, you'll feel stress, right? But if you reduce feeding your desires, and if you are satisfied within, then you'll feel more light-hearted. You'll feel peace and happiness within you. So that's a good sign that you are no longer feeding this fire of desire. Instead, you are gradually moving towards the real peace, right? So that way you can see considerable improvement in your mind. You can see how your baseline happiness is going up with practice. Within few months, you can feel it. And there was this new research. It was about mindfulness and the stress levels. And they are saying, after researching so many people, after doing thorough research, they are saying that 20 minutes of mindful sitting daily, it will reduce your stress level by 22%. 20 minutes of mindful sitting daily, it will reduce your stress level by 22%. So think about it, 22% reduction of your stress level. That's a huge achievement just by 20 minutes of sitting, right? So it's worth sitting for 20 minutes. And as a result, you get rid of 22% of your stress level. Right? So that type of improvement you can feel. Average practitioner can feel. And if you know the correct practice, if you get correct advice, and if you find the proper balance in your practice, then your benefits will be much higher above the average practitioner. Right? So this is the very idea. You can't satisfy your desires by feeding them. That is the worldly way. That way we have tried for many years, but still we weren't successful. Right? But as a practitioner, you still have to feed your desires into a certain level, even a monk's life. Right? You have to maintain your body. You have to function. You are satisfying your desires into a certain level, right? But among these things, if you continue your practice for some time, then you can see how the real peace, without feeding any desires, without satisfying any desires, there's this happiness and peace within. Still you function, still you eat your meals, still you talk to other people, still you might see various things, but overall you are not feeding your desires so much. Instead, you have found the real peace within. That's the very idea. In order for you to see that, you might have to continue at least for a few months. And when you see those signs, it's like a good omen. It will tell you that the practice works. Practice works. You just have to continue doing it. And if you continue like that, then more you practice, higher the peace or the happiness level within you. It will keep increasing. There are different phases of this practice. Gradually, you go through these different levels of healing. And when you heal more and more, you'll feel more and more lighthearted in your mind. And after a few years of practice, you can really see the impact. You can really see how you have transformed yourself. I'm sure there are a number of people, even in this audience, who have started as beginners a few years ago and continued for a couple of years, and they see their own results. They see how the practice have transformed their lives. Right? So that's the very idea. This topic, it's about feeding your desires, feeding the fire of desire. And it's a very nice analogy about a web that catches the spider. Right? So today's topic, that's all I have to share. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for that talk on desire today, Bhante. Next on the agenda is our reports that we have received. We're presented to Bhante for his feedback. And for that, I invite Lushani to take on the Q&A and the reports.
Thank you, Sonali. Avasarai Bhante. Before we start reading the reports, like Bhante said, it's important to do a daily practice. And if you can do start at least with 15 minutes, but like Bhante said, try to do about 40 minutes practice a day. The recommended time is about 1 hour of doing mindful walking and mindful sitting every day. But with busy schedules, it's always good to do something rather than nothing. And I think it's important to have like a daily practice. So if you are new to the practice, there are those two links that Sonali is sharing on mindful walking and mindful sitting. You can get some guidance from it. And then what we would recommend is that you write a reflection report after your practice and then share it us with Sonali has put that on screen. You can either share it on our Google Forms or email it to us at beginnersnb@gmail.com. And then what we'll do is we will share those reports at the session on a Saturday, and then Bhante will give you focused, dedicated advice on how to progress. So that's really important, especially if you are new to the practice, to write down the reflections of like what you are experiencing whilst you're walking or sitting. So whether it's sort of how the texture on the ground or pressure points, etc., if you're doing walking meditation or just sort of how you're noticing the pressure points, the incoming and outgoing breath at the nostrils. if it's with the mindful sitting practice. Hopefully that will then help you progress because Bhante is here to give you guidance to continue. So with that said, I will now read the report. There's only one report today, Bhante, so I will start reading it now. It's mindful walking. Walked outdoors, usually signs of walking notice, such as feet pressing against the ground, lighter weight on lifted foot, body weight shifting and quicker head heartbeat, etc. Few thoughts, chilly around face felt, soon the walking felt automatic. Even with light distractions like sights and sounds, the walking continued, walked for 35 minutes. Mindful sitting. Sat on the cushion and after a quick body scan, the breath noticed near nostrils. In-breath cooler and out-breath warmer. When breath became subtle, the attention had moved to rise and fall of the stomach. Vibrations in body felt as if in the background and familiar boredom experience. Not sure how long this lasted. When prominent breath noticed again, the pressure in lower body felt as painful. Urge to adjust posture arose, but it did not happen. Calmness in mind noted and breath noticed as rise and fall of stomach. Sat for 50 minutes. Mindfulness during the day. It is easier now to observe the thoughts, words, and actions of self more than those of others. The habit of observing what is going on in formal practice and in daily mindfulness seem to reduce the levels of judgment and increase level of compassion for self and others. Several recent interactions without preconceived ideas meant that there was less mental heaviness, and the preparing for battle type of energy wastage has also been reduced. Peacefulness experienced consequently. This feels a bit better investment of limited time available. In the past, it has been difficult to organize time-sensitive events in an amiable manner when many opposing views were flying around. Mind tended to malfunction in those times. However, last week was a good test, as there was such an event with various ideas. Yes, the mind was malfunctioning with judgments about ideas and others, but it did not last for too long. A Dhamma friend's calm and gentle challenging helped see perspective and regulate the mind. Either it shall all go wrong or well. Does not matter which happens. This made so much sense. Time-sensitive event worked out fine, and calm mental space noted, and feedback was I looked relaxed. Valuable experience of practicing, observation from formal practice, leaking naturally into rest of the time. Dear Bhante, look forward to your valuable feedback. Much merit to you. Karman Saranam, end of the report.
Okay, now let's start with the sitting and walking. You try to be the observer of that process. And gradually, let's say as a beginner, it's harder to be the observer. You jump, you interfere. That happens a lot. But when you continue for a while, you develop that ability to be the observer without interfering. Let's say the walking. You become better at becoming the observer. Sitting, you become the observer much better, right? So that way, we do this repetitive daily practice. And as a result, you can see these benefits arising in your day-to-day life. You can see how you have transformed. So this is one experience that person is sharing. Even the audience can see, they are all, the report and what's the transformation that person has gone through, right? So that's how this practice is helping. You do your homework, you do your daily working, walking and sitting practice, and as a result, even in your daily lives, you become better at observing. Right? You can see the previous mind, the usual mind, is at work. It's malfunctioning. It's creating stress. It's giving judgment. This is the mind, the previous mind. But now your mind, the resilience is improved. You return to the normal state much faster. That is why you are saying the recovery is much faster. Still, the judgments are there. Still, the very old opinions are there. Still, that malfunctioning is there. But you recover much faster. That is the very quality of resilience in our mind, right? As the mindfulness practice, we train ourselves to become more resilient. That's what we are doing, right? You know, the resilient quality, it is somewhat similar to the elasticity in rubber. When a force or a strain is applied, the shape is changed, right? That ability is there. But the quality of resilience is when the force is removed, how fast you can recover back to the original shape. That's the very idea. That's the elasticity in rubber. You apply a force, the object get deformed, and when the force is released, how faster you can return back to the original shape. That's the very idea. So even in our mind, when certain problems come, it's like we are under strain, right? The shape of our mind is changed. But when the problem goes away, how fast can we recover? Some people, they take years to recover. Let's say a family member passing away, right? It takes years to recover for some people. Some people, they get into a depression, right? So the resilience is lower. But when we train ourselves, the promise is that we can improve the resilience of our mind. That is the very training. Let's say we try to be with our breath. Suddenly it goes away to a memory or something like that. So our mind get deformed. The shape is changed. But we realize it, again we return back to the breathing. So we recover our mind. Again, we continue for a few minutes. Again, your mind goes to some other future planning kind of thing. Again, we recover our mind. So again and again, what we are training is, we are training in recovering our mind. This is the resilience quality. It can get deformed, but how fast can you recover? Unmindfulness will arise. You go after thoughts, various memories, but how fast can you recover? That is the very idea of the practice. So you can see that very training, that very exercising is becoming useful in your daily life. When certain judgments, certain incidents, certain problems, certain issues come, how fast can you recover? That's the very idea. Don't think that those judgments will go away. Don't try to, chase them away. Don't try to, get rid of problems. That's not the way. Instead, what we are doing is we are recovering. We become better at recovering our own minds. That's the very idea. So that is the very training that you are doing. So you yourself, you experience the progress that you have made. And thank you for sharing. Keep on practicing.
Yuvante, for your guidance. We also have another report which we have just received. So I'm going to read that report, time permitting. Theruvan Saranai Bante. Recently, I had to start communicating with relations while breaking several years of no contact period with them. As I have been living alone for several years, the lesson was about finding the balance between being alone and being with a crowd. Noticed with sudden incidents that acceptance and prepared nature came forward, nature come forward to face whatever arises with the practice. Same time being with relations, another chance came to find whether I still get triggered by their words and actions. Due to the practice, it was not high as early. Slight ups and downs fades away while some beliefs are being shattered away, making space to be more okay with whatever situation fades. Still learning. To be alone when possible is facilitated as it is like a way to recharge. When it was mentioned in a report, Bhante advised to see liking, disliking to the situation. While with the crowd, there is a tendency of adjusting to it, no rejection to be with them, still find views, ideas, practices not matched. Even with them, it is like leading to no difference between being with them and being alone. Sometimes have to make a decision out of choices which arise. Last Saturday, I visited my family and they were to go out and ask me to join. They reminded me of the Zoom program I would miss. Same time, the annex was not cleaned and messed up. Still, it arises to go out with them, but sometimes it is not the same. When it feels to be alone, it is clear to follow it, as in such a space, only I get a chance to attend a Zoom meeting from Nisaranavanya and sit for Paryanka. As the urge is to keep this hidden from others, being alone when needed is the only choice. Early when I went out, there was an urge for Sakmana after I came to annex, as it was like draining me being with the crowd. No, now no such urge is visible. But signals come to be silent. When such slight tiring fades while talking with the relations. So signals are followed to adjust. It is clear as with mistakes, learning takes place. Bhante, thank you for the guidance. Theruvan Saranai, end of the report.
Okay, now going through these experiences, observing ourselves, observing likes and dislikes in the situations, we get many opportunities to train ourselves, right? We may make mistakes. Some mistakes could happen, but again, tomorrow you get a fresh chance, fresh opportunity, right? So this way, time to time, we go into aloneness. Time to time, we have to go to the crowds. These things are there, these situations are there. So you can gracefully go through them. Don't try to resist much. Instead, try to go through these different situations, different demands. Just go through them gracefully, and it's a learning opportunity for us. Again and again, we are getting many opportunities in our daily lives to train ourselves. We may make mistakes, but tomorrow you get a fresh opportunity. Tomorrow also you make mistakes, but again, day after tomorrow, another fresh opportunity. So this way, we are not judging ourselves. We are compassionate towards ourselves, and we train ourselves. Right? It's a never-ending opportunity. As long as you live, you have this opportunity. But by training only, you can become better at it. If you keep on postponing, then it won't work. One day you'll run out of time. But you start today, you keep on working, and gradually you become much better at it. That's the very idea. And you realize that, you know, it's like developing more flexibility. towards the situations. You don't resist much. Now, for example, you missed last week's Zoom session. I think I missed about three sessions, right? Last 3 weeks, I couldn't attend. Thankfully, the Venerable Sister accepted. So we continued with the program, but I couldn't join. Usually, even me, initially, when I miss a session, there's this resistance in my mind, right? I don't like the change. I don't like the demand that is made from other circumstances, right? I have this program in my mind planned, and when the plans are disrupted, I feel the resistance. But I too have become better at it. I too have become more flexible, right? So that's how the practice works. Even I am learning, you guys are learning. That's how we develop as a group, right? So what you see is that when you keep on practicing, when you give you more opportunities to practice, you become better at it. You become more flexible kind of thing. You move through different situations without much resistance. You move through the situations gracefully, we can say. Right? You develop that ability. It's like, you know, how the fishes, they swim, right? It's not like they are going against the water. Right? They are moving in between the water layers. That's how they swim, right? But when we swim, we go against those layers. That's too much resistance, right? If you know swimming, if you know probably butterfly, right? That's more like swimming like a fish. Difficult to absorb the technique, but once you become good at it, you feel how much less resistance there is. You don't go against the layers. Instead, what you do is you slip through the layers. You go like a wave. That's how the fishes swim. They don't feel much resistance because they are not against the layers. They are not against the water. They slip through. They slide through the layers, right? So much less resistance. That's the very idea. Even in life, we can do things. We can waste so much energy, but at the end of the day, you feel you are in vain, right? But instead, you can preserve your energy, you can move through different situations gracefully, and you realize you maintain a certain level of peace in your mind, right? So that's the very idea. You can fight these situations, you can reject, you can blame others, all those things you can do. So much energy wasted, and you can somehow function, but it is not worthwhile to function like that. What you have to do is you have to move through these situations gracefully. And when you do that, when you develop that ability, you become much more energy efficient, right? You are not exhausted. Although you travel with them, although you visit them, you are not exhausted. That exhaustion comes as a result of the resistance in your mind, right? So that's the very idea. Keep on practicing, and you realize that you become much more energy efficient. You function, you listen to others. Sometimes you are doing your own things, sometimes you are compromising, right? It is changing. But at the end of the day, you are better at it. You become more and more peaceful within, right? So that's the very idea. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Bhante, for that valuable guidance. We don't have any other reports, but we have a question. We've received a question from someone who's joined the program saying that their kids are new to the practice and their ages are 8 and 4 years old. By all means, you can continue to join this program. I'm referring to the children. But if you also want some dedicated programs for an 8 and a 4 year old, we have what we refer to as the Sati Parsala run by Ms. Saranavanaya. And the Sati Parsala sessions are also available online. So, depending on where you are based, whether you're in England, as in UK or Sri Lanka or Australia, do send us an email with some details to our email address, and then we can give you guidance as to where to find the closest Sati Parsala. So you can either attend in person or in some countries it's online. We have online sessions, for example, in the UK. And if you're in Sri Lanka, I think Bante, we have the Sati Parsala sessions in person and in online as well, is it?
Yeah, Lushani, now 8 and 4, right?
Yes, 8 and
So
4 years
it would be
old.
ideal if they can join a children's session, Satipatthana sessions. And Sonali, I don't know whether you are able to share it. You can see this WhatsApp message. I think I forwarded it. That session is like in 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 3 p.m. Sri Lankan time, English medium. That's for children. So if Sonali can find that message in WhatsApp and share it in the chat, right? So that would be the ideal session for this age group. And it's a children's program, more flexible towards children. And that way they can join. And we are starting probably in 40 minutes, that program. After this, we are starting that. So these are Zoom sessions. And based on your location, you may try and find a physical session or the place as well. But I don't know what is, maybe Sonali can tell us, or Dushan can tell us what are the sessions available in UK. Sri Lanka also few sessions are there, few locations are there, but I think Zoom would be more flexible for everybody.
Thank
What
you,
are the
Bhante.
programs that you have in UK? Physical sessions?
I can see a
I think
physical session.
Tarindu will be able to answer
Yes,
that.
I can see Tarindu has appeared. Tarindu, you have, do you want
Hello. Yeah, sorry. I have two kids, screaming two kids. I didn't hear the question. I heard about program or something about programs.
Satipasala programs, any physical sessions, or do you still do it online, Tharindu?
The online session, we no longer continue. We are planning to restart it in summer. So we hopefully should be able to restart with Swaminarayan's blessings. The physical sessions are currently, we don't conduct any physical sessions. We are planning to do one day camp when Lokaswami visits UK next year. So I will be sharing those details on our UK WhatsApp group. So if anyone wants to join our group, they can simply drop me a text message. I'm just gonna give my number on the chat, so please do text me and then I'll send the link.
And if,
Lushan, you are
yes.
having this once a month session, right?
Yes, Bhante. So if they are based in London, if you come once a month, we have it at the Thames Buddhist Vihara in London. There is a mindfulness practice. So there's about 2, 3 mindfulness practice sessions like walking, meditation, mindfulness eating, and then also the sitting practice. And then there is a Dhamma discussion followed by that. The next session will be next Sunday, the 8th of December at the Thames Buddhist Vihara. So wherever you are, I think there's quite a lot going on in the world in terms of Satipatthana and learning the practice. So for an 8 and a 4-year-old, those would be the most appropriate ones, like Bhante said. Best is for you to email Sonali. Sonali has already put the link, Bhante, for the session in half an hour. So that might, I think that would be a really good one wherever you are to go into that Satipatthana session in half an hour for the kids. But with that said, we have about 6 minutes. So this is a good time for questions. If you have any other questions, please do ask, because that's the only way we can learn. I think I saw a question coming in. Let me just quickly check the chat, Bhante. Yes, Samantha, did you have a question? Oh, I can read the question. If time only question, is it possible to exit without desire? Nature has programmed us to exit with desire. So are we accepting the desire and reduce the fuel through meditation and mindfulness?
Lushani, can you repeat that last part, please?
Sure, Bhante. Bhante Samantha, Sonali Samantha has said that she can't unmute, so maybe she might be able to explain the question better. The question says, if time only question, is it possible to exit? Oh, so sorry, my apologies. Is it possible to exist without desire? So is it possible to exist without desire? Nature has programmed us to exist with desire. So are we accepting the desire and reduce the fuel through meditation and mindfulness? So what she's asking is like, nature has like almost programmed us to exist with the desire. So is it possible to just
Yes,
reduce
so
it?
existence is desire, right? So desire will make sure that you exist forever. That's for sure. Right, we are programmed. We are programmed. That is the survival. We when it comes to those things that are related to our survival, we don't have to think. It just happens, right? We are programmed. So this is basically going against that very nature, that very existence. And when you try to go against that existence, it is harder. Buddha says going with the flow, like swimming downwards, downstream, and swimming upstream, right? Swimming downstream, you don't need much effort. It will continue, right? It will continue the existence, the survival, it will continue. But swimming upstream, it takes a lot of courage and effort. Right, that is the very suffering that you have to go through in order to get rid of suffering. Right, so that's the very idea. So basically, through the practice, although the ultimate goal is to put an end to the existence, you can't exist and have, you know, peace. Existence demands suffering. You have to suffer. That's the basic quality of existence. So it won't work both ways. Either you exist and suffer, either you get rid of this and put an end to the suffering, right? And when we read the stories about those arahants, after putting an end to the existence, they still live. But there is no preacher kind of a living, right? You can point at something and say that this is that person, but there is no real person there. There is no real desire. There is no real existence there. But they just, you know, it's like you put out a fire. Still, the warmth will remain for a while. Gradually, that warmth will also disappear. Right, so that's what happens to when somebody is enlightened. You can feel the warmth of that existence, But after a few years, few decades, that warmth too will disappear, right? So this is the practice is basically putting an end to the existence, at least creating it a bit less resistance, right? So that's the idea. Try to see.
Thank you, Bhante. That's what I was alluding to. So basically, that's why Buddha mentioned the four foundations of mindfulness. I suppose we can't just sit here and do nothing. The mind is always latching on to something, so we just accept whatever is there, and then follow the path, mindfulness and the satipatthana, I suppose, in a way, to keep everything that the unwholesome qualities away, in a way. Would that be correct, my understanding, Bhante?
The statement that you made, it wasn't clear to me. I don't know whether some connection problems or something.
No, that's okay, Bhante. I got what you said. So basically, we can't just be still, basically. The mind is always latching on to something, a desire. So we just we have to be mindful, and that's why what Buddha said to do the be in the four foundations of mindfulness. That's what we do, have to practice, basically, in a way, to go
Yeah,
against the grain.
try to continue with the practice, and with time, you can see how the mind is changing.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Because one thing I was right, it's like we can't really do anything. It's like the training just had the mind has to automatically do it, isn't it, Bhante? Like the more training, the more practice we have, the mind will automatically reduce that desire. It's not something like we can tell ourselves like reduce the desire because we like Samatha says we always have the desire, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not like you can get rid of desire. It's not the way. Instead, you practice you by being mindful. You create the causes for the desire to, reduce. That causes are the mindfulness, and as a result, the desire will reduce, right? It's not like you can't directly go at it. That's not the way. That's not possible. Too much a too big a goal. That's the very very issue, right? You can't just directly go at it and try to change it. That's not possible. Instead, you try to be mindful in the moment. Continue that mindfulness as long as possible, as much as possible, and as a result, the desire will reduce, right? So that's why the practice works. Most people, they think that by thinking, by analyzing, by studying, they can get rid of it. That's not possible. That won't work. Instead, you have to do the practice, create the causes, and as a result, the desire will reduce, at least reduce, right? So it's not like going after it and, getting rid of it. Getting rid means that too is desire, right? Desire to get rid. Yeah. So it won't work like that. What we try to do is we try to create a moment without desire. That moment is the mindful moment. Next moment, again, the desire might arise. But again, after that, you can behave yourself to be mindful again. So that way you create this like momentum in your mind through the practice. Previously, the momentum was to, towards the desire. Now you are creating a alternative momentum, a different direction kind of a momentum. And with that also, the mind changes, right? So that's why they say enlightenment is it's like an accident, right? You can't create an accident. That's not possible, right? Enlightenment is it's like an accident. So the practice will allow you to be accident prone. That's the very idea.
Thank you, Vante. It's the first time I heard that, and that's actually very pertinent and very a good simile. Thank you for that. Any other questions? We've gone slightly over time, but if you have any quick questions, anything that's please ask now. Put your Zoom hand up, and then we can unmute you. Someone has asked whether we can share the details of the program in London for the children. So the program, the next program is on Sunday at on the 8th of December, from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock. So it's a 3 hour, about a 2.5 hour program. It's at the Thames Buddhist Vihara, and we start with a mindful walking session. Then we have a bit of a Dhamma discussion, then a little break, and then we have a sitting practice, and we talk more about sort of the importance of doing the mindfulness practice. So that's the rough agenda. The typical age groups are between the ages of 4 all the way up to about 15. So that's a quick introduction to the program, and it's held next Sunday in London at the Thames Buddhist Vihara. But Sonali can share the details. Sonali's children used to attend that session, so she knows it well. And I will be conducting the session. Thank you. Anything else? I don't think there is anything else, Pante. Thank you so much for your guidance. I will hand back to Sonali.
Thank you, Lushani. Thank you to everyone who had sent reports and asked the questions as well. And there's been a lot of information shared today. So if anyone wants any information, write to us at Beginners Envy, and we will be able to direct you to the right location, right information. Just e write an email to that email address, and I will share all the information with you. So with that, I think it's time to end the session. Just before that, a quick reminder to all the cohorts that our review meeting is happening tomorrow at London time. It is 9:30 a.m. and it's 3 p.m. in Sri Lankan time and 8:30 p.m. in Canberra, Australia time. So with that, we will end the session today. On behalf of the organizers, I'd like to thank Venerable Homa Kamadhamma Kosala Thero for his guidance on continued guidance on this program, and not forgetting the Chief Abbot of Nisarana Vanaya, Venerable Udayiri Kamadhamma Chiva Mahathero, whose idea was to initiate this program. And of course, all the organizers and the cohorts that are continually helping us. And our program will commence as usual next week, the same time, and 1 p.m. In Sri Lankan time. So with that, I will wish everyone a happy and mindful week ahead, and I will now end the session.